because it's economical. This will be the medium and low-cost housing in the future for a lot of people. Now, I've got to guarantee the consumer, basically, that they're going to be protected. Now, I don't know if you can't, you could take out a bond even, and I'm not even sure if all of a sudden you went bankrupt, that consumer is protected, nor is his reputation protected.
Yes. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Representative Van Vliet, you're describing the present situation with all builders. Manufactured home dealers, builders, are regulated this identically to conventional builders, except they also have another bond. Dealers have a dealer bond for another $15,000. Seems to me that the consumer is probably better off dealing with in the manufactured housing side of the housing business than the site built side. You're dealing with people who have generally more capitalization. Fleetwood, for instance, I think grossed over $1 billion last year. I mean, these are very large companies, where at least the person that built my house shortly thereafter, it was a site built house, went broke and moved to Alaska. I don't know where he is now, probably went on to Texas. I still don't know where he hid the transformer for the doorbell. At least with the manufactured home, you're dealing with a house that's totally engineered, including the foundation. You're dealing with very large companies that are producing these homes and fairly substantial companies who are acting as dealers of the homes. You may decide.
But I could be dealing with three people here.
Yes.
An independent installer, a dealership, and the manufacturer. In stick-built house, I've got the contract.
It turns out that you're better off, though, with the manufactured home. The dealer, in fact, is the contractor. They act as the general contractor. They're the ones who hire this sub. And assuming the sub went broke or went away, as in your example, they ultimately have recourse, if his bond proves inadequate, back up the stream to the dealer's bonds by means of the contract they have with the dealer. They're more protected. I agree that there's probably some shortcoming in the Builders Board statutes. I don't know how you can't remove all risk from the marketplace.
Let's backtrack here, though. This bill only establishes the liability of the contractor, of the installer. It has no reference to the liability of the dealer, does it?
Except that, Mr. Chairman, the dealer is the contractor installer.
Not always,
though.
Not always. True. Generally speaking, I believe they would be.
Yeah, but we can't deal with, you know, when we put a bill out, we can't take generally speaking.
So this refers to the installer. Is the dealer an installer?
If the installer arranges for the installation, I believe he would be the installer. I'm not sure how you would. It doesn't seem logical to have liability back against the dealer if the dealer had no part in the installation of the home. But it seems to me that if I see
the definition of installer, and it means any licensed person actually engaged in the occupation of installing, setting up, connecting, etc. And I don't think that refers to the dealer. The dealer is defined as a person engaged in selling or distributing mobile homes.
What percentage of the dealers are installers? What percentage are we talking about of the installations are done by dealers, and what are not done by non-dealers?
Well, let me backtrack here.
Right. Could I get
Section 5 refers to installers, uh-huh, not dealers, and installers are not dealers.
Okay, but my question is, she said she's a dealer, she installs as well, her business does. What percentage of the installations are done by the dealerships? I get some idea of what those parameters are.
20%.
Only 20%?
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Trout, if you mean the dealer actually doing the work himself with his own crew, or do you mean where the dealer contracts out for the work?
No, I mean the dealer doing it with his own crew to begin with. Okay? About 20%?
That's his.
I got to look at the language of the bill. It does not refer to dealers. It refers to installers. Now,
okay. Mr. Chairman, maybe we could
ask.
If
they hire somebody, they're hiring an installer.
Right.
And this bill refers to installers.
Mr. Chairman, that language, you know, as I look at it, isn't doesn't seem to convey the meaning that we'd intended. We intended the installer to mean the person who does the work or the person who arranges to have the work done.
You better change the definition then.
Yes.
Okay. So the dealer could then be the installer. And if he contracts, and if he manages the contract, what percentage of that is done that way? Where the dealer manages the contract?
On new homes, I would say 100%.
80, 90, 95%.
80, 90. Okay, so that's where we need to get at it then. Basically, either the dealer is installing directly on a limited number, or the dealer is basically the contractor for the installation. Now, are the dealers, many of them, fly by night? Do they disappear, or are they pretty steady business?
This date, we had a weeding out here in the last 6-8 years, all right, but there's, you know, they come back and they're just like used car dealers. They'll, excuse me.
Some used car
dealers
will
come up and set up. They can get flooring and don't have to have a lot of capital to do it, so they can come back in easily.
Can I explain to you how we do it? And I think it might possibly be fairly, well, maybe it's not typical. We have a set of installers that we use every day, okay? But our builder's board number is the number that we give our consumer to put on their building permit application. I guess you'd have to get really technical to say whether or not they're really our installer. They don't set for any other dealership but us, okay? They set 95% of all of our, install 95% of all of our homes in the field. Their builder's board number is never given to any of the consumers. Ours always is.
Why?
They're subs.
Because we
feel
the ultimate
liability.
We are liable and responsible.
If there's any problem, you'll take the, you're the one that wants to deal with it.
We want to deal with any problems that happen to the people who hire us.
That's true. Can I ask a incidental question to that? Do you pay workers' compensation on your installer?
It depends, not on the installer, no. He pays his own workman's compensation.
So he is independent.
He does have his own.
Self-employed contractor, has his own license.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's separate and distinct from yours.
Yes.
But it's your license that goes on the building permit.
Yes.
Interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. I guess you've got to look at this. Somebody's better review this, because that isn't what this bill says.
Mr. Chairman, we might be able to correct that by looking at page 4 of the hand engrossed at line 12. And after the word, it says installer means any licensed person. We might be able to solve this problem and address your concerns by inserting
words. I'm sorry, you're looking at your engrossed hand engrossed.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's on page 4 of that. Line 12. Where it says any installer means any licensed person who, or any licensed person, actually we could insert the words after person, who arranges for or is actually engaged in, that may take care of that concern. Our intention here is
now,
not.
Hold it now a minute. Mm-hmm. You would require her then to pass this examination.
That is our intention. This bill is not intended to limit the liability of dealers. This is to increase the protection of the consumers.
What I'm talking about is then the people that she had actually doing the installing wouldn't have to pass it.
No, they would be.
Because she would already be the installer, and she would have passed the examination.
Mr. Chairman, we also have a definition.
Am I infuriating you? Frustrating you?
We also have a definition of what we call apprentice installer. And that's intended to cover the licensing of the people actually doing the work. So it would be my belief that reading those two together, both in this case, both the dealer would be liable, assuming the dealer contracted for it. That dealer would also have to be certified, and the people doing work through the dealer would have to be certified. Now, there might be different levels of testing or training required, and those details could be worked out by rule. We would envision that the person who actually does the work have hands-on training.
Mr. Chair, that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. It's the protection. If I've seen a lot of trained persons screw up.
Yes.
Okay. what is the protection of the public in case of a foul? You've got it, in the bill, if you're not only going to take care of the training, the proper training, and the definitions of the people that will be doing this, but also what is the protection for the public under these circumstances, either of the individual installer, the installer that's part of a farm club of dealers, the manufacturer's limit liability ends at a certain point, which needs to be clarified.
Would you would you list these questions and check through legislative council, see what needs to be done on this bill? I'm a little concerned about the various ways in which it goes. I have another question.
He had a response to my
response to, you know, all of this. I deal in it's $1 million a year out of my plant, and I probably deal in about $100,000 worth of legal settlements a year. But for some reason, I get named and brought into this house falling apart. I pick up, no matter what, just by negotiation and settlement, X number of dollars because it's going to cost me $5,000 to fight it. So, you know, this thing is always going to be there, and I'm always going to be in this business, unless we get bought out or sold off somewhere. But,
or bankrupt. You
know, bankrupt. I don't think we're going to go bankrupt.
But, and most of those are those due to the fact of poor installation or faulty materials.
Anything. Not the faulty materials is not a big deal with us. That is not...
So it's insulation mostly.
Insulation becomes, from the start, it's a poor set. That starts a bad customer relationship.
Right. Okay.
The next step is we all go out there and look at it. I go do mine and the dealer may do his. He may not get it right. I may not get it right. But we have a sincere interest in doing it because we take care of gray areas. If it's a gray area, I'm instructed by the president of my corporation to take care of it.
Well, I think some of these questions, for instance, if you redefine what an installer is, my question would be, if somebody came back, whose license are you going to pull out of here? The actual installer or the dealer who just hired the installer but under this is classified as an installer? I think you need to clarify those relationships.
Yeah.
Another question I would like you to have with legislative council is on page 5 of the Hannon Gross, line 26, which refers to assessment of a civil penalty as set forth in ORS 701992. Well, 701992 only refers to violations of section 701. The language is any person who violates any provision of this chapter. Well, that's chapter 701. I don't know how you could interpret that and then as applying to this.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to take that a little bit further, and that is there's some reference in here to the administrator being able to do certain things, and this sets up a compliance process through the APA. And I'm not sure whether this is referring to the there's a Mobile Home Construction Safety Standards Advisory Board. If that then refers to the administrator of the Building Codes Agency, does the Building Codes Agency and its enabling legislation have the enabling legislation to allow it to assess civil penalties in this case, in all cases?
The Building Codes Agency is present. They may be able to answer that.
But I'm not sure it's the way, I mean, maybe it's just his Hannon Gross version the way it's laid out here, but I'm not sure that that's as clear as to where that authority line runs.
Dave, I'm sorry, I didn't see when you came in. I don't know how much of these comments you have heard.
Well, it's very interesting, Mr. Chairman. I'm just here to lend my support to the bill and let you know that this is a common problem with installation.
At least my intention here is.
It sounds like you're trying to tune it up a little bit.
I'm in complete. Support of it. I just don't want us to get some legislation which has some confusing provisions. At least they were at least confusing to me.
Was this done by LC mock-up?
I did that.
You did?
During the lunch hour.
Mr. Chair, does the mock-up, we need to approve the amendments to make the mock-up.
Well, right now I'm so confused at how this mock-up would look.
Is that right?
I'd like to see a clean copy come back correctly mocked up and then with the amendments as they should be. Has LC looked this over to tie in the ORSs correctly to make sure we got
the right?
LC drafted the amendments.
They did.
Yes. The Those are, I believe you have those amendments before you.
But you mocked it up.
Yes.
Dave, have you got enough interest in this to see if we can get it cleared up?
Sure, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Does it make sense to approve the amendments that you have so far now or not? And why didn't you do it in your own committee?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Trill, these questions were not raised in our committee.
How about
the questions of the amendments must have been, weren't they?
These dash three amendments?
Yeah.
We did not see these dash three amendments.
Right.
The issue we focused on in the committee was the issue of who ought to bear the cost of the installation program, and we sent it down here with the directive to the sponsors that they work on amendments to do what you've seen here, the two-thirds, one-third, the industry bearing the more of the burden of the expense of the program, at least the first 2 years. And that was, I think, that was the main thing that we focused on in the committee.
You never developed the protection of the consumer part at all in bonding or anything else? You never
Not anymore than was in the bill already.
Mr. Chairman, if I can make one more response. I know that licensed and certified people can mess up. I had a new home built, and when you turn the shower, it's hot, it's cold, and the cold, it's hot. And that was done by a licensed. I always remember that.
But don't tell your guests.
That's why you're
a practical joke.
It's always possible for licensed people to make mistakes. Here, we're trying to provide one, training so that those mistakes are less likely to occur, and two, protections that far exceed the protections presently afforded consumers, either of site-built homes or manufactured homes.
Well,
that's a good idea.
There's another question down the line. If the funding for these, and I guess we haven't seen an appropriation for fee bill on this thing, but if it's going to go to training, do you have, there's a question here, I can just see some Attorney General fees coming down the road here. Is that going to be accounted for in the amount of fees collected to cover this?
Talking about the cost of a government.
It would appear the cost is all dedicated to training for these fees.
Look,
my guess is that it's
there isn't enforcement, there's costs here for enforcement as well.
Mr. Chairman, this analyst then on the money, was this provided by the Builders Board?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hannah, it was provided by Building Codes.
Or Building Codes?
Yes.
Okay, so this is what the license fee would generate. This is what the program would cost and run.
Yes.
Okay.
It's about a...
Might be underneath that Builders.
And I think to establish the continuing fund also, probably the Builders Board would have to provide some money in its budget to get that started.
Yeah, that is provided.
That is.
Yeah.
It's in the bill, I know it is. Yeah. But we had the budget in our subcommittee. And is it provided in the budget? Remember? Do we have any money?
No.
Do we have any flexibility for any money? I don't think so.
Okay.
$309.
We'll have to evaluate it again. Sometimes you don't have to lend them too much.
Just taking that higher education, yeah.
Oh. For sure.
I take it that the
the Southern
Attorney General fees for projected under this year are less than $1,000. $809, is that right? Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Phil Hopkins with Legislative Fiscal. I'd like to point out something. There's three, you talk about all these the different sections. There's three of them sections that I'd like to talk about, but I'm waiting, you know, and I don't want to jump ahead of anybody.
Oh, do it.
Well, one of the sections is, this bill, as it comes in, shows that the licensing function becomes effective July 1, 1990. This proposal shows that this bill is going to be repealed 12 months later.
91.
12 months later.
I mentioned 2 years.
I think you have a problem here with starting a program that's going to expire in 1 year, particularly when you're going to go through and license. them, and so I don't know how you want to amend that. The second thing...
I want to amend it by striking out the proposed Section 13. I dislike sunset clauses.
I do, too.
The second...
Okay. See, out they go.
The second item...
I know the House loves them.
Anything you say, Senator.
The second item, I think Representative Burton was alluding to, that's in the hand in gross version, Section 9, and it says the cost of developing and administering the training program for the apprentice stallers and installers shall not exceed. Well, this amendment only talks about what would the Building Codes Agency do to train them, but really what the Building Codes Agency is looking for in their thing here is in the enforcement section, and I don't know if you'd want to have a... I don't know if you want a specific section. This just talks about training and development, but you want to just give them the whole ball of wax, so to speak, to do the training, the enforcement, the adopting of codes, and put an inspector in the field for the whole thing. I'm not sure why you want to confine this little amount in here. I'm not sure why that's in there.
That's a good question.
But to which they may respond, I'm not quite sure why that's in there. Because they're going to do more than just train. They're also going to do the enforcement, which I think I should bring up the point then that since three of the members here were on the Public Safety Committee that heard the Building Codes Agency, that one of the packages in there was for 28 inspectors. You might remember that on the floor.
That's right.
31.5 FTE that included 28 inspectors, 14 of which are in this specific program, for manufactured programs.
So we already got it covered.
Well, you have 14 in there, and when I looked at the analysis provided by Building Codes Agency, and they came up with an inspector, I think really what you're looking at is spreading it amongst 14 or maybe 15 inspectors. I don't think their intent is to hire one inspector who's going to travel around the whole state, but that it's going to make everybody's 8-hour day a 9-hour day, and therefore the workload increase will be sufficient to hire maybe one more inspector. That's the thought process I used.
They projected two inspectors, didn't they?
Well, they did originally, and now it's coming
down,
and I'm recommending one.
Who pays for the Veterans Administration inspectors for state veterans laws? Some of these are purchased under state veterans, aren't they?
Correct.
What stage does the inspection for this kind of an installation take place? When the installation is complete, is there an inspection, or is there an inspection only when something goes wrong?
Mr. Chairman, prior to occupancy of a manufactured home, like any other structure, it's required to be inspected.
That's a local inspector.
Is it local?
Yes,
or
that's
is
a
it
local, a local inspector, except in those cases where the state Building Codes Agency has the program.
Right.
Homes are red tagged if they're not, if they don't pass that inspection. As I indicated earlier, this is part, we're also tuning that part of the program up, and we're suggesting that administrative rules be adopted requiring that local inspectors also go through continuing education so that they are more familiar with the jobs they're supposed to perform.
That's very valuable.
And is that a requirement, or are you just asking them?
We're asking that the Building Codes Agency adopt such a rule. We're told that they have the authority to require that, and we're somewhat optimistic that they are going to adopt that rule.
Shoot, we can't get those guys out in the field now to inspect a house on a decent time schedule.
We want them to
be so tied up in classes that they won't ever get out to do their work.
Well, that is, of course, the quality control check on the installation. The only one that is in place is the local government inspector. We have plenty of quality control on the manufacture of these structures. I mean, HUD has to approve the structures. HUD has to approve the foundations. All we're asking for is a simple program that would increase the odds that these homes would be installed accurately. In almost all cases, these homes are installed properly. There are no complaints. In almost all cases, we're talking about the exceptions. Maybe there's a case where the foundation under one of these homes collapsed and everything fell towards the center and down to the center of the earth. I've not heard of such problems. My hunch is that isn't the magnitude of the problem we're trying to address here. What we're looking for are doors that don't close properly because that foundation isn't absolutely level as it's supposed to be. Air leakage where the pieces go together that decrease the energy efficiency of these structures. Something could have been corrected by a simple task at the installations. But we're not trying to design a program here to deal with homes that disintegrate.
Let me interrupt you. Len?
Well, I wanted to respond to Representative Van Fleet, because we did have a builders board and building code budget in our other public safety subcommittee, and you made the mention that what they're asking for is these inspectors that's going to go to school. The problem primarily is Eastern Oregon, because counties over there don't want to handle the building inspector, and that's where the state has an inspection program. Other communities on the west side of the Cascades have done their own building inspecting programs, and they get the resources off there. So the people that Don is referring to are primarily local building inspectors. Eastern Oregon would be where you'd have the state inspectors. And we did increase their staffing level this session and their budget substantially.
And the fees are paid.
And the fees are there to pay for it.
Well, there should be some mention that state veterans loan inspectors ought to be included in this for training.
Who is
your VA? Your VA over here has its own inspectors that go out and inspect on stick-built houses. And that's probably the most rigid inspection you get compared to FHA, which is sloppy and under standard. Mm-hmm. The state GI is much, much tougher in their inspections. And I don't know how they work in with the builders board, but those people basically are either, sometimes the state assigns them to a local inspector to go out and do it and report back. In other cases, I've had actual state inspectors come on out and look at a particular stick-built home. You'd want them included in the training in this, because a lot of your funding on it is probably going to come from state GI loans.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Who is going to do the continuing education and the training?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Trode, that training could be conducted by the Building Codes Agency or somebody certified by the Building Codes Agency for conducting that training. So they might, a manufacturer, for instance, might develop a training program. They would take it to the Building Codes Agency, who would review it, possibly certify it. Under those circumstances, the manufacturer himself might offer that training. Our association, for instance, might contract with someone to come in and provide the training. The last training we put together also had a strong workers' comp or accident prevention component to it. There have been at least two cases where these homes have fallen on the workmen. So we would envision that this training would include on-the-job safety. We're interested in reducing our losses as well.
Are these, depending on the manufacturer, are these homes substantially different in installation, or are they much the same regardless of who manufactures them?
Each one has their own specifications, and we do not refer to the other manufacturers except maybe some intercompany type of relationships that they say, what do you do in this case, all right? Otherwise, we have our book packet. So you put the top together first, you put the bottom, or this type of thing. And we acquire this clean down, and they don't, so forth.
I was wondering, the person who's trained as an installer would be trained to install one manufacturer's house or a whole lot of them, a lot of different houses?
This would be generic, I think, as far as that's concerned. Currently, right now, I have started in my plant on our own a traveling road show, because we're having so much problem with adjustments and so forth. And, these guys never get together. These guys have never met another guy from another company unless they've gone over. And it's amazing how these guys have gotten together and just kibitzing amongst themselves or finding out a lot of things about what the other guy does. Otherwise, you get the old thing. I've been listening 20 years, don't tell me how to set up a mobile home. And mobile homes are not what they were when I started 18 years ago.
Well, let's identify some things we'd like clarified. I have a list here myself, and some of the others I may, in concentrating on what I was thinking about, I may have missed somebody else's. I think that we need to identify the, quote, installer, quote, close quote, who is subject to penalties. I'm not sure that there wasn't some confusion there. I think, too, that we may need to make clear, if we want to do this, the liability of the installer and how you get at that liability. Somebody suggested a bond, maybe that's not appropriate. Maybe there isn't any problem there. Maybe it's the make clear that the installer can be penalized, but the liability rests with the dealer.
Mr. Chairman,
I don't know.
Again, we would, at least it's my understanding of the current process, that if the dealer contracts for an installation, the dealer is required to have a builder's board bond. That person, that subcontractor, if it's an independent entity, is also required to have a bond. Just off the surface, I have a concern about new bonds.
I'd like to have that clarified here, if we can have some testimony.
And who do you go against in case there's a problem?
That's what I want, make clear the liability in this case.
It would be attractive.
How you get at it. Number three I have is, this question I raised, is this appropriate reference to 701.992, which is a civil penalty. Number four, I think we need to have clarified this matter of the training. How we budget for the training, or is it, or is there some other way of doing it? It's not clear here how much training is to be undertaken.